Welcome to the Optimal Body Podcast. I'm Doc Jen.
And I'm Dr. Dom, and we are doctors of physical therapy, bringing you the body tips and physical therapy pearls of wisdom to help you begin to understand your body, relieve your pains and restrictions, and answer your questions.
Along with expert guests, our goal of the Optimal Body Podcast is really to help you discover what optimal means within your own body. Let's dive in.
So something that Jen and I always talk about is building up from that foundation, from the feet in our movement, and how what happens at the feet affects all the way what happens up the chain through the knees, through the hips, through the low back. We're talking about ACLs in this episode. So what happens at the feet definitely is impacting what happens through those knees. And Jen and I absolutely love what barefoot shoes bring to our feet in the ability to move and learn how to support themselves and build up those foundational movement patterns. So if you've ever wanted to try out barefoot shoes, Vivo, of course, is the brand that we use.
We've had a code change, so make sure you use code TOB so that you get 15% off. That is TOB, like the Optimal Body Podcast.
They have a 100-day trial period where you can try these things out, see if they fit your feet, but give it that time. You need time to transition. Give your feet time to get used to what is different, to build up those muscles, and you will notice how fast they gain that strength and how much that will benefit you in the rest of your movement. So link in the show notes, code OPTIMAL15 to get 15% off and try to start living that barefoot life today. All right, diving in on another PT Pearl, and today we're talking about ACL injuries. So that's our anterior cruciate ligament. And this one's really popularized, especially in like professional sports, because it's that one big knee injury that we always hear about and stuff.
Yeah, exactly. I think it gets dramatized a little bit. Mm-hmm. And we're going to talk about, you know, what is popular in terms of what we do about it and what we know now and where the research hopefully is heading as well. When we talk about this ACL, we know that it's connecting the thigh bone to the shin bone in a really easy terminology. I mean, your femur to tibia, it's like one of those ligaments, ligament meaning that it's connecting bone to bone, not muscle to bone, right? So it's a ligament within the inside of your knee that's really helping to prevent that shin bone from moving forward.
So yeah, the ACL being one of those major like ligaments of the knee, we have the ACL, the PCL, the LCL, the MCL, but they're just kind of these four major ligaments that give us good end range stability forward, back, side to side in that knee, because it's kind of on an island on its own where it only bends forward and back and does a little bit of this rotation. But essentially, our ACL is preventing that tibia or that shin bone from translating forward. Say anytime our quadricep fires, the ACL is one of the structures that kind of keeps that tibia from moving forward when the quad pulls on it.
Yeah. And it's just helping to keep, you know, that stability in rotation. So say we do cut and rotate, that's when we hear about ACL injuries more often, right? Mm-hmm. And so it's kind of helping to provide that stability within there. And when we look at it, we have degrees of ACL injury. Mm-hmm. So we can have grade one sprain, which means it just got kind of slightly stretched. Maybe you're feeling some pain, but you didn't necessarily hear a pop. And mm-hmm. It's just that. It's a sprain. And then we go to level two where it got a little more loose, a little more stretched, more like a partial tear. And then we go to grade three where that's where we see the full rupture of the ACL.
Yeah. And then based on whether it's a grade one, two, or three, you know, we might see different things if we're like immediately trying to test somebody's knee. So if you've ever had one of these happens or seen this happen, often you'll see like an athletic trainer. I guess I'm thinking in the context of sports because, you know, someone will go down on a court or on the field. An athletic trainer will run out there or PT or whoever's on site, and they'll do this test called the Lockman test, which is kind of like the hallmark standard for testing. Okay, is the ACL still doing its job? And you basically bend the knee a little bit and pull on that lower leg segment to see if that tibia or that shin bone is shifting forward. There's also something called the anterior drawer test, which again, in a way, is just seeing if that leg is shifting forward. And that's also a great test for chronic instability of the ACL.
Yeah, definitely. I think I would say Lachman's a little more accurate in terms of us just being able to quickly test. But then obviously we have things like MRIs that really help to identify the grade and the degree to the ACL injury. As far as signs and symptoms go of what you might experience or think, oh, this is why I need to go get an MRI or go get it checked, right, is all of a sudden you hear a loud pop or you feel a really big popping sensation within the knee. You might feel severe pain. You might not be able to perform your activity. You might have a decreased range of motion, rapid swelling that is kind of happening in that area, or like feeling like you're just unstable when you're trying to stand. Yeah. And so those are all could be indications of a possible ACL injury.
Yeah, kind of giving way of that knee or something, like you said, just general instability that people will feel. And, you know, people who might be at a little bit higher risk of this type of injury, I mean, we see it in certain sports, different sports that have a lot of lateral movement, sports that have collisions or contact. Again, one place we see it a lot is like in football, if you're tackling someone, or soccer, if you slide and hit somebody's legs out in the wrong direction, certain forces can be a factor in tearing the ACL.
Yeah. I thought it was pretty interesting that in the US alone, we have like over 250,000 people every year who are rupturing their ACL. Like, that is a very common injury then.
It's not always sports. I did have a friend once whose mom tore her ACL doing the stanky leg at a dance. So
stop it.
So if you break it too hard down on the dance floor, you are also at risk.
Oh, man. I mean, and we see the mechanism of action, which you kind of talked about, like slowing down suddenly or maybe coming to a sudden stop, changing direction quickly, pivoting. And really, it's pivoting along a leg that's not very bent, right? Where like it's a very slight bend of the knee, rotation, kind of having that foot planted and then changing direction that way. So it's not like you have a big knee flexion. It's just a slight knee flexion and rotation.
We have this mechanism of injury essentially where the ACL gets stretched to its capacity and then we might have the injury. And for the longest time, you know, we've always thought, oh, the ACL is gone. Like, we have no stability now. Like, there's nothing else there that's going to do this for us. But we're learning the more that we study these ACL injuries and look down the road at people who may have had an ACL reconstruction versus somebody who may not have had an ACL reconstruction, that there's different routes we can take with this.
Yeah. And I think, I hope at least that we continue to study this moving forward, because I think especially in the US, our immediate is surgery. Well, if this structure is what held that stability within the knee, then we have to create a new structure within the knee that will maintain that. And we usually do that from tissue grafting, meaning that we're going to take a portion of a tendon from the hamstring or from the quad tendon and put it into the knee, and that becomes your new ACL. And then you have a whole reconstructive process and rehabilitation process from that, right?
Yeah. And I think that one thing that we think about, especially say if we're taking that tendon from elsewhere or just, you know, in that reconstruction process anyway, one of the biggest things we need to do is retrain the sense of that joint, the proprioception of that joint. We bring this up a lot whenever we disrupt tissue, whenever we have injury of muscles or tendons or ligaments for that matter, we lose some of that joint sense. Mm-hmm. And so now if we've done a graft, like you're talking about taking something from our hamstring or our quad tendon, you know, are we disrupting fibers elsewhere that might potentially affect how our hamstring operates, the strength of our hamstring on the side we took that graft from? Is that going to impact things? So what we notice is the neurologic training that we need to do in order to get that injured side back into operating condition. A lot of the times we just thought, oh, we need that quad strength back. We need to strengthen the quad. Even if the quad gets as strong as it needs to be, as strong as the other side, is it firing in coordination with all the muscles of the other leg? Are all the muscles of that injured leg firing in the order that they're supposed to give the proper stability to that knee? That's the main thing that we really need to focus on training back in.
Whether you have that reconstruction or not.
Yeah.
But I like that you kind of bring up thinking about if we are taking tissues from different areas, then it's not just that joint sense now at the inside of the knee, but now we're looking at other ways that we need to impact mm-hmm. our body and help improve that neuromuscular control and the way that it's acting. And I think it's cool that we actually have seen studies now where we have similar outcomes from non-surgical, so not getting that ACL reconstruction, and surgical outcomes in terms of pain, in terms of symptoms, function, return to sport, quality of life, and even talking into knee OA. I mean, it used to be the thought process was, well, you have to get a reconstruction of that knee or else you're more likely to get knee OA down the line, where now we're having studies that are showing complete opposite of that.
Yeah, where if you don't have the reconstruction of the ACL, you might not have as significant knee OA down the road
yeah.
as if you just do conservative management or working on exercises. And the thing that I think is crazy is, so the ACL is a non-contractile tissue, meaning it's not like a muscle. It doesn't flex. When we get to the end range of the joint, the ACL doesn't suddenly say, okay, I'm going to flex up to give us some more stability here. So even in the scenario where we're just operating normally, say we don't have an injured ACL, the ACL is never there saying like, okay, I'm going to flex and provide yeah. you more stability. It is kind of just that end range joint stability. It's like the last guard. So why do we think that suddenly putting it back in there is going to be like, okay, that's now going to fix the stability issue at the knee? Like, we tore it in the first place for a reason, likely because all the other muscles about the knee weren't providing that good harmonious balance.
Mm.
So before even we go back and reconstruct the ACL, why don't we, like we're talking about, really work on the function and the neurologic firing and the motor patterning of all of these muscles about the knee? Because we do surgery, we go scramble things about, put an ACL in there, and then think it's going to be easier to relearn all of that neurologic right. programming. I think we might even have a steeper hill to climb then.
Yeah. Yeah, I love the way that you kind of allow the brain to understand how that's working, right? Because we're not, we're not telling our ACL to contract at a different point in time, but we are with the muscles around it. So why can't we get strong
yeah.
and create the same effect? And what I think was cool too is again, reading through some of the literature, yes, we have an increased laxity if we don't have that ACL, right? So passively, if I were to just, again, test the knee and do all these mm-hmm. other tests, I can see that it's more lax. However, that doesn't mean that I can't improve on the functional stability and actually moving and using my musculature to control what's happening at that knee. It is possible. Mm-hmm. And then I start to think too of like, people who have general laxity within the body, you know, if we're talking EDS or hypermobility, what do we tell them to do? Strength train, mm-hmm. get strong.
Totally.
Right. And so like, why wouldn't we be doing the same thing if all of a sudden you have an ACL injury?
Yeah, I think it's talking about, I mean, the different components of instability. We talk about this with the ankle too. We're doing an episode coming up on chronic ankle instability. That's going to be great. But there's the mechanical component of stability, and then there's the functional component. And mechanically, say now we're talking about the knee again, mechanically, if the ACL is gone, we've lost that mechanical stability that the ACL provides. That doesn't mean functionally we can't get the knee functionally acting like it would when the ACL was there, providing that functional stability with all of the other muscles and soft tissues. So mechanical stability versus functional stability. We're really looking for that functional stability, and then mechanically doesn't really matter as much what's going on in there.
Mm-hmm. And then if we look at re-injury, because we always, I mean, that's super common, right? You tear your ACL, even if you get reconstruction, sometimes you're more prone to get it again. And we now have studies that also show that re-injury of the knee is actually more common in patients who've undergone reconstruction, about 24%, versus rehab alone is about 9%.
Yeah, that's pretty wild.
That is pretty wild.
I wonder what they mean by re-injury, because if you don't do reconstruction, there's no ACL to re-injure.
Right.
So I wonder in the...
I think it's talking about other structures around the knee.
Yeah, I was going to say in the conservative, I'm sure that there's talking about other injuries of that knee, which still, like if you didn't have the ACL, my initial thought would be, oh, they probably re-injure more because that knee isn't stable.
Right.
But I think that's just popularly what we've been taught as athletes or people and as clinicians coming through school initially.
I mean, it's just what gets popularized. I remember Shantae Cofield, shout out to Movement Maestro, she put up in her stories the other day, or at least when we're recording this the other day, that something was popularized in a, I think it was a biking magazine or some kind of magazine. And on the front, it's like this guy, you know, the magic pill to how this guy helped his knee. And on the inside you read, oh, well, he had surgery and he got this fancy new technology. And she was like, why are we arguing as PTs about what, you know, what is best practice or whatever, all these little nuances that we argue as PTs rather than just promoting that you don't have to have that surgery as the quote unquote quick fix. There's long-term fixes that actually are better. And if we as PTs all work together to just continue to promote this ability to rehab and ability to get strong, then we start to change what is popularized.
Well, as PTs and as just people in the health, you know, system at large, like ACL is gone. Okay. ACL graft, getting a lot of arthritis in the knees. Okay. Let's do a hemiarthroplasty or a half unilateral knee replacement, things like that. I think that was what the article was on, a unilateral knee replacement, which you're seeing more and more of. Oh, if the structure looks like it's in rough shape, replace it. Let's get it out there. Let's get a new one in there and fix it. And we like to use that type of marketing to people to think you're getting a better piece. You're getting a part that's going to help you long-term down the road without having looked at long-term down the road studies. We like to sell to people that that's going to be a good long-term fix for them. And a lot of the times, I don't think we actually even know what the research or what the data would show.
Mm-hmm. Have you known someone who didn't have an ACL reconstruction and went back to sport?
Went back to a sport. Off the top of my head, I cannot think. I know I've known people who are older who have chose not to get the ACL reconstruction and had no issues with it. Right. Again, not gone back to like compete competitively in sports, but definitely have been active in their lives or have gone back to different types of exercise.
Yeah. I know someone who, granted, not professional, so however, a very athletic cop, and he had ACL gone in both of his knees and continued to play football.
Oh, wow.
And those leagues sometimes, you know, as a cop, they're quite competitive, even though, you know, not professional or anything. But again, he was playing football on two knees that didn't have ACLs.
Yeah. And I think that that's just one example of, I'm sure many out there, and I've heard of others that have returned to higher level or impact type sports without getting that ACL reconstruction. So I think one thing that we're just trying to put out there is, again, the solution that may be presented to you initially as the only solution or the only thing you can do to fix that knee, especially in the case of an ACL strain or rupture, it might not be the only option. Reconstruction isn't the only option, and research continues to emerge forward saying, hey, there are other ways to train that knee to get back to whatever function it is you may want to.
Right. And again, this is, every body is different, right? So we're not saying now that surgery is bad.
No.
So it is pertinent in certain situations. Yeah. However, if we can see, I just like living into the possibility, right? If the possibility is that you can heal and there are people who have gotten back to recreational sports and pivoting and rotating again without an ACL and are okay, that's possible then. Main thing always is that we want to be able to use our body and function. Mm-hmm. So rather than just relying on something to do the work for you always, even if you have the surgery, we get to understand how we can work with our body to long-term help it so that we're not developing OA or osteoarthritis and other issues. And we're continuing to work our body as a whole.
I mean, our goal as clinicians ourselves is to always make sure people know the risks, the benefits, and the alternatives of whatever it is we as clinicians are going to be recommending to them or consulting with them in. And sometimes I don't think that all clinicians or physicians do that. Yeah. They just know the one thing that we do to fix the issue, here's your option. So always know going in that you have a license to ask questions, you have a license to continue to learn more about your options, and that that's your decision to make with input from the providers around you, not choosing from the decisions that they lay before you. So always empower yourself to ask questions. If you're dealing with ACL issues or have had this in the past, make sure you ask us questions if you have any.
Well, one thing that I really want to touch on real quick, because it was at the end of our notes,
do it.
was just that there's a little bit of controversy, I feel like, in the ability to allow your knees to fall into valgus, right?
Oh, yeah.
And that's one of the mechanisms of injury, is that knee falling inside. And we have many, many studies that show, and we as PTs are always working to like, oh, are you getting knee valgus when you're jumping or single leg squatting or doing anything? And we're measuring that to get back to sport and prevent injury, right? Or prevent ACL injury.
Yeah.
And there was actually, interestingly enough, a study that showed no significant difference between getting injured and not getting injured for looking at women in particular, for that inward knee motion. But they only looked at two things. And this is where it's like, well, we're not looking at the whole capacity of things still. So they looked at double leg drop down, thinking you're on a higher surface with two legs, you drop down and you kind of rebound and land. So you might have had some knees coming in toward each other on that rebound, or single leg squat and having your knee come inward.
Yeah.
Significant, however, still not related enough to function of sport, I think.
Yeah.
You know, there's no single leg hopping. There's no cutting and rotating.
Yeah.
I think we need more studies to determine, but it's interesting.
Yeah, definitely. It's another one of those things that we look at, as especially as PTs, that quality of the movement. And so it's interesting hearing that when we look at that ahead of time, we can't still determine who might be someone to injure.
I think being able to work in all of the ranges and really push your body in learning each direction and strength and control in mm-hmm. each direction of motion, because as you pivot and you rotate, your foot's going to come in, your knee will probably come in on the inside of the big toe. Like it's normal if yeah. you're pushing side to side, right? So how do we teach the brain and the muscles to respond in a strong way rather than an unstable way and be able to control that motion? And I think that's what's most important here in preventing injury and pain and all that.
Yeah. And knowing that, like when we work with PTs, they do all sorts of stuff with people who are rehabbing from injuries with ACL. Again, whether you've gotten a reconstruction or not, because kind of like in any other injury, we approach it the same way. We need to restore the mobility at that segment, make sure that the knee is getting its full range of motion, make sure we have strength that can get us actively through that, build up that strength again, building that quad strength back. It is important. Again, once we have the quad strength back, then it's about teaching that leg how to coordinate that strength.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I mean, I think that's always most important, range of motion, extension, knee extension, right? Whether you've had the surgery or not, like you said, quad strength, hamstring strength after that.
Yeah.
And then now make it functional. So mm-hmm. we work it in what we call open chain exercises, meaning like think of a leg extension. I'm going to sit at the end of a table, have a weight on my leg and lift my leg, right? That's working quad strength, but not in a very functional way, but it's strength. It's still important, and it's yeah. building up that tissue tolerance. And then we're going to go into now working quad strength in a loaded position. So
yeah, doing other things like squats, mm-hmm. mini squats, just sitting to standing from a chair. I mean, I think something that a lot of PTs will do with people is do that little mini squat and getting us used to understanding what our knee is exactly doing when we're starting that squat motion. One of my favorite things to do is the four-way taps with your mm-hmm. foot or your heel.
It balance, just, so yeah, important.
Doing any sort of balance activity, single leg balance with tapping your foot on other things, because all that's getting us to do is, again, focusing on that functional stability on our injured knee while we're distracting our mind and doing other things with our opposite leg or arms or body.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. We're building that muscle to be able to respond to the brain and in ways that we don't have to think about it anymore. Like at first, we want to put a lot of thought. We want to look at the area. We want to make sure it's activating, right? And we eventually want to be able to get to a place where we don't have to think about it, because that's what we want in sport or running or even chasing after your kid. You don't want to have to think of my quad, my hamstring working. I want to automatically be able to have that work on its own. So going from double leg activities to single leg activities to then jumping double leg to hopping single legs.
And then doing all those things with distraction, with dual task. I mean, especially if someone's looking at getting back to athletics, a PT could have somebody running, jumping into a single leg stop on an unsteady surface.
Right.
And then they'll throw something at them. Because that's something that you might run into on the soccer field, perhaps, is running, cutting, and then you turn and look and someone's flying at you and you need to make a split decision. And when our knee can learn to support functionally and do the right things in that type of a scenario, then our body's going to start feeling comfortable getting back into a really complex environment of like a game or walking in a grocery store or whatever it is that all of a sudden you pivot and you need to make a split decision and trust that the knee is going to automatically do what it needs to do.
Yeah, exactly. But the reason that we're kind of broad with these exercises and explanations as well is because honestly, you should be working with a professional. You should be working with a physical therapist in person to determine what your individual body needs and the progression for you. Again, whether you've had surgery or not, and hopefully if you are deciding to have surgery, you still have pre-physical therapy.
Yeah.
And then have the surgery and then have post-physical therapy. It's just so important to continuously retrain the brain of how those muscles are working and how you can recover better. There you go. Another PT pearl out in the books. I hope that you learned a lot about your ACL and just what you need to do to start preventing injury. Remember, it's not just about one exercise. It's about movement as a whole. So I hope that you're enjoying this. Please subscribe, rate, and leave a review if you haven't yet, just because it does help us so much to be able to be seen by so many more people. So wherever you like listening, subscribe, leave and rate a review. And don't forget that next week we have new podcasts coming out. And so next week, our educational PT pearl is on relieving piriformis syndrome. So that little muscle inside the glute that sometimes causes radiating pain down the leg or just directly into the hip, you're going to want to tune in.